We found this old scrapbook titled Insignia, Kenya Collection, World War II. And it has some different badges and symbols. I'm looking at some of them here, sure, that I want to show you.
Mm-hmm. Show me.
I see a red one.
The one with this one with the F on it.
Yes, and it's called Mombasa Fortress.
Yeah.
And then described as DEF platoon.
Platoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, there's this one with the yellow and red.
Yep.
It says Nairobi Transit Camp.
Right. And then there's another one.
Flip the page. Yeah, on this other page.
East African Army Ordnance Corps. And it's blue with a red line running across it.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, is it a hexagon? No, it's not a hexagon. It's just a square with a diamond, I suppose.
It's diamond shaped.
What are these for? There's one that's pink on this other page that just says East Africa. So it's like this looks more like a badge, right? And it says East African Pioneers or EA Pioneers, which I assume means East African Pioneers.
Sure, this is the one I really wanted to show you.
Uh-huh. Ebu, show me.
Right? Like broad sheet of white paper. And then you've got all these insignia kind of taped on.
Yeah.
How would you describe it? And yeah, it says Italian insignia at the top. And then it's all these different brass pieces.
Yeah. Some of them are kind of cute, actually.
Very different. Well, until you look at the description.
I know. Oh, my God.
Italian artillery. Cross for the campaign in Abyssinia. Colonial Carabinieri. Mm-hmm. Carabinieri? I think those are Italian police. Mechanized Black Shirt Battalion. Mm-hmm.
Black Shirt? Like Mussolini Black Shirt. It's like Black Shirt's Black Shirt.
Oh man, here we go. Fascist Sappers Regiment. Collar badge. Today we're using these insignia that we found in the archive to explore a slice of Kenya's history, focusing on the Italian military and Italian prisoners of war held in Kenya during World War II. This is A Palace for the People. I am Angela Washuka.
And I am Onjiro Koinange.
So what do you know about Italian prisoners of war in Kenya?
Well, I know that Kaloleni, as our listeners might also know from season one, mm-hmm. was built by Italian prisoners of war. And then there's that church on the way to Naivasha on the Maimahio Escarpment Road that I think was also built by Italian prisoners of war.
Yeah.
I know one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a book, but I don't know the name. So maybe I don't know one more thing. I see the cover in my mind. It has a picture of Mount Kenya on it.
Ah. This book, No Picnic on Mount Kenya.
Yeah, that was quick. You just had it randomly over here. Okay, yes, this is the one.
Surprise. I can tell you about the book.
Mm-hmm.
It's called No Picnic on Mount Kenya. It's written by Felice Benuzzi, and it was published in 1948. When the clouds covering Mount Kenya parted one morning in May 1942 to reveal the towering peaks for the first time, Felice Benuzzi is transfixed.
Okay with the drama.
The tedium of life in POW Camp 354 is broken by a sudden idea, an outrageous, dangerous, and brilliant scheme. Few people would break out of a prisoner of war camp, trek for days across perilous terrain before climbing the north face of Mount Kenya. Hey, and my guy, I've climbed this thing.
You have.
So, with improvised equipment, meager rations, and a picture of the mountain on a tin of beef. Fewer still would break into the camp on their return. On their return, Shiro, they break back in.
Okay, just have so many questions. First of all, stellar performance. I don't think I've ever seen you so animated or excited about any episode of our podcast. Well done. Okay, but now I'm intrigued. Continue.
Okay, so spoiler alert.
Uh-huh.
First of all, okay, so this book is about three Italian men, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Who were prisoners of war in Kenya. And they were being held at this camp called Camp 354,
okay,
which is in Nanyuki. And so they break out of the camp in order to climb Mount Kenya, which actually they could see from where they were being held.
Okay.
Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So they leave the camp. They have, I'm trying to remember the story. They have a homemade Italian flag.
Okay. I guess for the top to yeah, me. Okay. Yep. If they, you know, make it. Okay. Yep, okay. Yep. Okay.
You know that time and how people used to love just planting their flags.
And their flags. Yeah.
Anyhowly across this continent. And then they spend like 18 days trying to climb.
How long did it take you?
5.
I need to like ask you for some tips.
It took me 5. Yeah. So they get to the top of Mount Kenya and then lots of things happen. Some of them are sick. They encounter elephants. All the drama, all the pomp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then they arrive back at the camp. They break back in.
In. Okay.
Yeah, into a prisoner of war camp. And they get 28 days solitary confinement, which is shortened to 7 days because their commander is super impressed by their quote-unquote sporting effort.
Wow.
And then later...
There's more.
Later,
uh-huh.
This book is wild. A book is written.
Okay.
True story movie adaptation is also made.
Okay.
So they were Netflixing
the
hell out of this thing.
Where's the link? I suppose since you're being resourceful, you must have the link somewhere. Is this it?
Franco, you came back. Did you make it?
Juma. Give them the telescope.
Yes, there it is. The Italian flag on top of Mount Kenya.
Yeah! Lifted the telescope. Okay. I have many questions. Well, I have 2 questions mainly.
I think we have the same questions.
We probably do. So number one,
yeah.
How could they, how on earth did they even escape? I mean, we as Kenyans are very well versed with what the British colonial government could do with detention camps. Let's mm-hmm. call them that for today. And why on earth, once they got out, would they come back? They were essentially in prison, right? Why would they come back?
Exactly. And the contrast that you've referred to between this picture of British-built, British-run detention camps mm-hmm. with the ones housing Kenyans during the Mau Mau uprising, to say the least, astonishing.
Wow.
And there were only 10 years between 1942, the year this guy climbed Mount Kenya,
mm-hmm.
and 1952, when the practice of the Mau Mau concentration camps began.
Well, there's the obvious difference.
These were Europeans, right?
Right, and even if they were fighting on the side of Hitler, they were still white.
Boom. And when I began to look into it, it wasn't just Kenya. The British Empire actually sent Italians to camps in South Africa,
mm-hmm.
Australia, the US, and in fact, the most amount of Italian prisoners of war were sent to Britain itself.
So what you're essentially saying is these guys imported the enemy?
Cabisa, they did.
Wow.
Segnata dal destino, batte il cielo della nostra patria.
You see, when Italy entered World War II, they did so on the side of the Axis powers, so essentially Germany and Japan. And one of the fiercest fronts they were fighting on was actually in the Horn of Africa, to defend their colonial possessions of what is now essentially Eritrea, Ethiopia, and Somaliland.
After the outbreak of the Second World War, the Italians joined the war in June of 1940, but there was a sort of standoff with no major military campaigns between the Italians and the British Empire.
This is Professor Bob Moore.
Until the Italians decided to try and invade British Egypt. That also prompted a war in East Africa, where the Italian possessions, Eritrea, and of course Abyssinia, which had been conquered in the 1930s, started a set of military campaigns, which were a complete and utter disaster for the Italians. It's one of the few examples of, in the early part of the war, of a major British military victory. The upside of that was that most of the Italian presence in that part of the Horn of Africa, if you will, was largely disposed of. It was more or less eliminated altogether. But it created a problem insofar as the British acquired huge numbers of Italian servicemen, Italian prisoners of war. And the question is what to do with them.
So when the British defeated the Italian force in Africa, they sent word back to London.
To give you some idea of the scale of this, the British forces couldn't actually determine how many prisoners they had in the initial stages. And there is one classic dispatch where they wrote back to Wavell and said, we can't tell you how many we got. We can tell you how many acres they cover. General Wavell, who was in charge of British forces in Egypt, wasn't happy with the idea of keeping them. Egypt was politically unstable at this point, and indeed had been for some time. So the question was, what do we do with all these Italians?
So the British have acres of captured men, and they don't want to keep them where they are.
Wait, did you say acres?
Acres.
Like acres on acres?
On acres.
Wow.
Of captured men.
Okay.
So they want to send them somewhere, ideally somewhere far away from the front line, and essentially, you know, maybe somewhere they could be useful.
The Italians are perceived as a useful source of manipulable labor.
The empire needed these workers, so they were prepared to do a lot of things, prepared to overlook that they had been fighting for Mussolini.
Well, that's interesting. They don't really consider them to be particularly committed to fascism. They don't really have the wherewithal to screen them. They know that there are certain Italian units which are heavily politicized, but run-of-the-mill, normal Italian infantry units, not really. They don't really spend a lot of time on it. Later on, when they start winning battles in North Africa, when they do run into more established and better trained Italian soldiers, then they start to think about these things.
So off they went. 60,000 came to Kenya. And to put this in context, this is a country that had 20,000 British settlers. So they essentially outnumbered the British settlers threefold. More went to Australia, South Africa, the UK, and even to the US, where they could do work that would usually be done by men who were away fighting the war.
Well, that's where it starts to get more complicated, because in practical terms, they can be used for anything that isn't war work. Under the terms of the Geneva Convention, they can be used for anything that isn't war work.
The Geneva Conventions of 1949 are a series of treaties that establish what is humanitarian treatment of prisoners of war.
Okay.
They state that if you capture a prisoner of war, they can work for you. But they can't do military work, obviously.
Okay.
You also cannot conscript them to fight their own people.
Fair enough.
But in World War II, almost anything the British government was doing was war work. So in order to follow these conventions, most Italian workers in places like Australia or the UK worked in the private sector as unskilled labourers.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are sending them into the private sector, they have to be paid. They don't get paid, but the British Army gets paid in order to stop them from skewing the labour market in the country in which they're being used. In places like Kenya, and the corollary is the same in South Africa, the difficulty is that certain types of work are perceived to be not suitable for white men, which means that there are limits to where they might be used. So under normal circumstances, they'd be used for agricultural work. But as unskilled agricultural labour, if they're sent into farms, there is just a possibility that they might be supervised by non-whites. And that can't happen. In the Kenya of the 1940s, as in the South Africa of the 1940s, that was just unthinkable.
Wow.
And so back to your questions. This is how we end up with a camp in Nanyuki full of Italian prisoners of war that the British Empire has decided are harmless, useful even, in a country where they must uphold the white supremacist order of things. This is A Palace for the People. I am Angela Washuka.
And I am Wanjiru Koinange. This episode was produced by me, Wanjiru Koinange, Angela Washuka, Maeve Francis, and Ida Holinambi. This is a Fathom Sirens production. You can learn more about our work at bookbank.org.
This podcast is supported by the Cultural Protection Fund, a partnership between the British Council and the UK Government's Department for Digital, Culture, Media and Sport. Thanks for listening.